In former President Trump's campaign finance trial, a bank employee who helped Michael Cohen open shell accounts returns to the stand. And why Judge Mershon believes Trump violated the gag order. Our legal correspondent reports from the courthouse.
Anti-Israel student protesters occupy a campus building at Columbia University, smashing windows to gain entry. We have that footage.
Four officers in North Carolina killed in the line of duty. We have more details about a tragic shooting in Charlotte.
Candidates for the EU's top job face off against each other in the first debate. We have the highlights and the attacks they brought against the current European Commission president.
The latest flare-up in the South China Sea. China's Coast Guard fired water cannons at a Philippine vessel, damaging the ship.
And NTD's 8th World Chinese Traditional Martial Arts Competition is coming soon. We hear one contestant tell his story of finding martial arts and changing his life.
This is NTD News Today, live from our NTD global headquarters. Here are Stephania Cox and Chris Beers.
Former President Trump's criminal trial in New York is back on today. A judge is likely to rule on alleged gag order violations this week.
Here's the former president addressing reporters this morning.
Document hoaxes, indeed, it is indeed a hoax. The whole thing is a hoax. All of them are hoaxes, including the civil cases. They're controlled by the White House. They're controlled by Democrat judges and prosecutors that were put there specifically. They hate Trump. And the people are getting it. That's why we just came out. A new Emerson poll just was released about 2 minutes ago. And I'm leading by a lot in every swing state and leading in the general election. And you saw the CNN poll. I'm sure they aren't too happy with it. But the CNN poll was fantastic.
As for the gag order, the judge rejected the arguments by Trump's defense team and ruled that reposts on social media are endorsements.
The judge threatened to put Trump in jail if he violates the gag order again. There is a court hearing set for Thursday to determine some remaining allegations of times when Trump violated the gag order.
Trump is back in court today for witness testimonies. The witness testifying today is Gary Farrow, a banker from former Trump lawyer Michael Cohen.
Trump's son Eric Trump joined him in the courtroom, becoming the first family member to do so.
And Flagstar Bank employee Gary Farrow was back on the stand earlier today, as you just heard, in that criminal false records case against former President Trump.
It's day 9 of the trial. Farrow has testified that he worked closely with Michael Cohen to open LLC accounts.
Joining us now live is NTD's legal correspondent Arlene Richards, who's outside the courthouse. Arlene, what's the latest from the trial?
Good afternoon to you. So after a short break this afternoon, the prosecution called its fourth witness, Robert Browning. He is the executive director of C-SPAN Archives. And as that testimony gets underway, let's do a recap of the testimony of Gary Farrow, the banker who helped Michael Cohen to open LLC accounts. Now, Farrow finished his testimony after only 2 hours on the stand this morning, and he also returned to the stand since Friday. Friday, he first came onto the stand, and today he finished his testimony. Now, he is testified that he helped Michael Cohen open the LLC accounts, one of which was used to pay Stormy Daniels the $130,000 in October 2016. Today, prosecutors questioned Farrow about that transfer, which is at the heart of this case. The prosecution showed Farrow a number of bank documents that provide a paper trail of the creation of the account and what monies went into and out of the account. Farrow testified that the account was opened very quickly and that if he knew that it was supposed to be used for political activity, it would have taken a little longer. To Farrow's knowledge, it was to be used for real estate consulting, according to what Michael Cohen told him. Now, quickly after the account was opened, within 20 minutes, a transfer from a home equity line of credit was transferred to Stormy Daniels' attorney, Kevin Davidson. The following morning, $130,000 was transferred to Stormy Daniels and to her attorney. And so Farrell said if he knew that this was going to be used for this hush money payment, he probably never would have opened the account.
All right, Arlene Richards, thank you for that report.
And turning our attention now to the Israel-Hamas war, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is pledging to launch ground operations in Rafah.
This comes as the Hamas terrorist group reviews the latest ceasefire and hostage deal proposed by Israel.
Netanyahu says the operation will continue with or without a deal. He made his comments during a meeting today with Israeli families of fallen soldiers and hostages.
Israel says the southern city of Rafah is Hamas's last major stronghold and vowed to destroy Hamas's battalions there. Israel is waiting for Hamas's response to its hostage and ceasefire proposal.
Meanwhile, airstrikes and aid deliveries continue inside the Gaza Strip. Video footage shows the U.S. military building a pier in Gaza to deliver aid.
Secretary of State Antony Blinken will arrive in Israel later today to advance the truce talks. The Biden administration is accusing at least five Israel Defense Forces units of violating human rights. The State Department says the alleged incidents happened before the war with Hamas.
Four of these units have effectively remediated these violations, which is what we expect partners to do. It is consistent with what we expect all countries whom with we have a security relationship with.
State Department spokesperson Vedant Patel says Israel has sent additional information about the 5th military unit and that the process is ongoing. Patel says there is no special treatment or double standards occurring.
At stake is whether the U.S. will withhold assistance to an Israeli military unit for the first time.
A law called the Leahy Law prohibits providing assistance to foreign security units that are credibly implicated in human rights abuses. And we have more updates on the anti-Israel protests on college campuses next. Many protesters at Columbia University are refusing to leave even after yesterday's deadline to vacate.
This comes as police break up protests at other colleges, including the University of Florida and the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill.
House Speaker Mike Johnson today criticizing the campus protesters.
What these students are doing is shutting down the campuses, taking control of buildings. They are threatening their students' lives. They are chanting death to America. At some point, you cross the line, and they have. This is not protected free speech. What this is doing is violating the rights of others.
Columbia University closed its campus to non-residential students and the media today. Overnight, some anti-Israel protesters occupied a building on campus called Hamilton Hall, breaking windows to gain entry.
After confronting university staff, the protesters barricaded themselves inside the building with barriers. Footage shows the protesters flying flags from the building that say Intifada.
The term refers to violent resistance against Israel. During the Intifadas of the 1980s and the early 2000s, Palestinian suicide bombers killed nearly 1,000 Israelis in terror attacks.
House Speaker Mike Johnson will hold a news conference on campus anti-Semitism this afternoon. NTD Newsroom will bring you more on this.
And joining us live to discuss the college campus protests is Alex Newman, an award-winning international journalist and the president of Liberty Sentinel Media. Alex, welcome. Good to see you. Students seem to be digging their heels in on college campuses, despite some now being suspended for their actions. What do they stand to gain or lose here?
Well, one of the things that we've learned in recent days is that a lot of them stand to gain a lot of money. You find the Open Societies Foundation, this is George Soros' tax-exempt organization, funding a lot of these anti-Israel protesters, including this group, Students for Justice in Palestine. They've got organizations where they're giving thousands of dollars to these students to be so-called fellows on campus. So it actually reminds me a lot of back in the Soviet days when the Soviet Union was sending intelligence operatives into the Middle East to rile up Arabs and Muslims against their Jewish neighbors. I think something very, very sinister is going on here. Of course, in America, we all value free speech, but what's happening here is way beyond free speech. These are threats. This is violence. And I believe it's being instigated deliberately for the purpose of undermining American society and undermining American cohesion. But it is hard to take Mike Johnson seriously in his complaints about this, as he's providing billions of dollars to Joe Biden's migration efforts to import more migrants from the Middle East, while at the same time pretending to stand with Jews in America who, for good reason, I think, are concerned about their safety.
Yeah, there are so many elements at play here. In terms of potential influence, according to the Free Beacon, A group of lawmakers is asking the IRS to investigate Chinese money allegedly funding these protests through certain organizations. What do you see about that aspect of things?
Yeah, we've seen this for many, many years now, the communist Chinese dictatorship using its money to fund really anything that will divide American society. We saw this with the Black Lives Matter movement. We saw involvement from organizations that were receiving funding from the CCP. And I don't think it's necessarily that the communist Chinese care about this particular issue. I think it's more about dividing American society, fracturing American society, causing civil unrest, causing hatred in this country. And I think ultimately trying to raise those tensions to the point where it becomes dangerous. There's obviously a concerted effort to do this. We know that this is part of the communist Chinese unrestricted warfare plan. And so I do think that's worth investigating properly. And I think really it's time for the federal government to crack down on this. We cannot have the communist Chinese embassies and consulates with diplomatic immunity running around and trying to stir up tensions in this country. It's been happening for decades. The Cubans used to be involved with Bill Ayers and the Weather Underground, the group that bombed the Capitol, bombed the Pentagon, bombed the State Department. It's way past time for the federal government to crack down on these foreign operators on U.S. soil, doing everything they can to cause chaos.
And we have seen some lawmakers pushing back in some ways. A group of lawmakers are saying that some of the students on campus there, civil rights are being violated. Do you think the movement could potentially evolve into legal, lawsuits pushing back?
There will be endless lawsuits on this, and we can be sure about that. Unfortunately, America has become a hyper-litigious society. And, to be clear, the First Amendment protects the rights of free speech for everybody, even if you want to say something really dumb. We all have a guaranteed right to free speech in this country. What's happening here, though, seems to be crossing the line. I mean, clearly laws are being broken. Clearly, a lot of these protesters have no idea what they're even protesting about. They are out there because they're being paid. And we've all seen the videos. Why are you here protesting? I don't really know. We kind of like Palestine. These people have no idea what they're doing. So I think we really need to go back and dust off those statutes that criminalize the funding and the encouraging of riots. When we see these things explode into violence, when we see people being injured and attacked physically, this has crossed the line way beyond free speech. And we need to look at who is funding this. And I believe we need to have some accountability here.
And just on the other side, Alex, lastly, Columbia University has been criticized for not doing more to reinstate order on campus. They're also not jumping to meet the demands of the encampment protesters. What do you think are the factors influencing the university's response here?
Well, Columbia University, like unfortunately most of the major universities in this country, is completely dominated by leftists. And at this point, they're practically eating their own, right? It's very, very awkward to see, queers for Palestine walking around waving gay pride flags and also Arab flags. I'm not sure they realize the cognitive dissonance here. And so you go back to what Rich Higgins, the director of policy and planning, said on the National Security Council during the previous administration. You have this bizarre coalition of organizations that really don't have much in common, including Islamists, communists, socialists, globalists, the LGBT activists. And they don't necessarily share the end goal. They just share a common enemy. And he actually explained in this memo that the goal here was to destroy the United States as a nation and as an ideal. And I think we're seeing that manifested now on Columbia University. And the administrators don't know what to do. Do we support the pro-Palestine? They're just backed into a corner now. It would almost be comedic if it wasn't so tragic.
There is certainly a lot to look at here. And I hope we can get to it further in the future. Thank you so much, Alex Newman. Alex Newman, always great to speak with you.
Great to be here. Thank you.
House Speaker Mike Johnson is still facing a threat to remove him from his post, but some GOP lawmakers are casting doubt that Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene will actually file a motion to oust him. Here are Representatives Kevin Hern and Kat Kamak commenting on the issue.
Is your conference anywhere on the motion to vacate still?
I haven't heard anything about it. Nobody's talking about it.
There's no will to do the motion to vacate. People recognize that it's not what we need at this point in time, so... yeah, we're focused on winning.
In the meantime, Democrats appear ready to come to Johnson's rescue. House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries, along with other Democratic leaders, promised to ensure that Johnson remains at his post for the current term.
The lawmakers said in a statement today that they will vote to table Green's motion to vacate the speaker, adding, quote, if she invokes the motion, it will not succeed.
Here's the speaker's response.
I am the Speaker of the House serves the whole body. I am a conservative Republican, a lifelong conservative Republican. That's what my philosophy is. That's what my record is. And we'll continue to govern on those principles. I mean, you know, you hope you have the support of everyone, the entire country. You know, like I said, I've got to do my job and continue to keep my head down. This is a very serious time for the country. We're not playing games here. The world is on fire because of all the things that we've talked about today. We shouldn't be playing politics
Up next, there will be no retrial against the Arizona rancher accused of killing an illegal immigrant on his property. It's the latest development in the ongoing case, making nationwide headlines.
And a former NSA worker gets over 20 years in prison for selling classified information to an undercover agent. Why the judge called the sentence an act of mercy.
Congress gives one of its highest honors to a Korean War vet. More on his heroic story and a word from House Speaker Mike Johnson in just a moment here on NTD News Today.
Welcome back. In North Carolina, four officers were killed in a shooting while on duty yesterday. They were attempting to serve a warrant at a home in Charlotte when the suspect opened fire.
The U.S. Marshals has a fugitive task force that we are a part of, that they went to go and serve the warrant as any other day that they would do. And unfortunately, this individual decided to greet them with gunfire, and it just turned into a tragic event for the officers that were originally out on the scene and then the officers that responded to try and assist.
The officers were serving a warrant for possession of a firearm by a convicted felon in the Shannon Park neighborhood.
Police identified the suspect as 39-year-old Terry Clark Hughes Jr. He died during the shootout with police.
Four other officers were shot and wounded but are in stable condition. A solemn procession in Charlotte earlier today paid tribute to one of the officers killed.
Authorities are investigating the incident. President Biden reacted to the shooting, calling the officers heroes who made the ultimate sacrifice.
And five Republican-led states are suing the Biden administration over changes to Title IX. The new rule expands Title IX to include discrimination based on gender identity, and critics say it takes away language that's been used to protect women's sports. The landmark civil rights law was enacted in 1972 to protect against discrimination based on sex.
Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton claims the new rule changes impose radical gender ideology.
Louisiana, Mississippi, Montana, and Idaho argue the rules exceed the Education Department's authority by redefining sex to include gender identity.
Florida and Oklahoma officials have announced rejection of the rules, stating they will not comply. Employers could soon find themselves in hot water for not letting a male employee use a female bathroom. The Biden administration published new workplace harassment guidelines yesterday.
The new document enshrines gender identity as a category protected against harassment, just like sex, race, religion, or disability. The guidelines also apply to using a worker's preferred pronouns.
A guideline is not legally binding in the same way as a law, but it communicates the government's position on legal issues. That means an employee could refer to the new guideline in case of a restroom or pronoun dispute.
And in a case likely headed to the Supreme Court, West Virginia and North Carolina refused to cover cross-sex procedures with government-sponsored insurance. A federal appeals court ruled Monday that it's discrimination.
North Carolina's state employee health plan bars all cross-sex treatments and studies leading to them, while West Virginia's policy bars coverage of surgery.
The judges wrote that this discriminates on the basis of sex and gender identity. And an update on the case of an Arizona rancher accused of fatally shooting an illegal immigrant on his property. Prosecutors announced yesterday they are not looking for a retrial. The decision comes just a week after the judge in the case declared a mistrial. This followed jurors' failure to reach a unanimous decision after more than two full days of deliberation.
75-year-old rancher George Allen Kelly allegedly shot and killed an illegal immigrant on his property in January of last year. Earlier in the trial, the prosecution suggested that Kelly's response to shoot at immigrants on his property was excessive.
Kelly's defense argued that groups of immigrants crossing through his property were an increasing concern over the years, which prompted him to arm himself constantly for protection.
And Mexico plans to work with the U.S. to clamp down on illegal immigration at the southern border.
In a phone conversation on Sunday, President Biden and Mexican President Lopez Obrador also vowed to address the economic and security problems that cause people to migrate.
Republicans have criticized Biden for rolling back stricter Trump-era border policies and failing to stem higher levels of illegal crossings.
U.S. Border Patrol picked up the illegal immigrants seen here on Monday. They were then transported to San Diego for processing.
On Saturday, illegal immigrants from countries like India, China, and Colombia received food from volunteers. They set up tents and fires while waiting to be picked up by Border Patrol.
And next up, 22 years in prison for selling classified information. A judge sentenced a former National Security Agency employee, Jerry Delke, yesterday. He pleaded guilty to attempted espionage last year after a sting operation involving the FBI.
The judge called the sentence an act of mercy, saying Delke was entitled to much longer. He said he believed Delke deliberately took the NSA job so he could sell national security secrets.
Delke was arrested after trying to sell information in 2022.
As someone he believed at the time to be a Russian agent, in reality, he was in contact with someone from the FBI.
Falky's attorneys asked for a 14-year sentence on account of the information not falling into enemy hands. They argued Falky, an Army veteran, suffered a traumatic brain injury and had attempted suicide multiple times. They said his traumatic childhood increased his risk of engaging in risky behavior as an adult.
But the judge cited a lack of medical records from the defense when handing down the sentence. The FBI said they could not give details about the information Delke attempted to sell, but said he was aware it could fall into enemy hands. An emergency slide that fell off a Delta flight after takeoff from JFK Airport in New York Friday has been recovered. It was found washed up on a jetty at Rockaway Beach.
The flight to Los Angeles safely returned to the airport after a strange sound and vibration. Delta says after landing, it was discovered the slide had separated from the plane.
The Federal Aviation Administration is investigating what happened.
And there's a new effort underway to cut down on rising numbers of deaths and injuries on U.S. roads. The National Highway Traffic Safety Administration has announced new automatic brake regulations.
We estimate that this rule will save 362 lives a year, prevent about 24,000 injuries, and save billions of dollars in property damage.
The new rules will require improved automatic emergency braking systems on new cars sold in the United States by September 2029. The regulations will require automatic brake systems that can help prevent collisions with other cars at speeds up to 62 miles an hour.
It will require a vehicle to stop before hitting pedestrians at speeds as high as 45 miles an hour. The systems will also need to apply brakes at speeds up to 90 miles an hour, even if it can't entirely prevent a crash.
Research from the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety showed today's AEB system reduced rear-end collisions by about 50%.
A highly toxic chemical will soon be banned for most uses. The Environmental Protection Agency finalized a rule today that would end many uses of the cancer-causing solvent, methylene chloride. It's most often found in commercial paint strippers. The chemical is dangerous when the fumes are inhaled or when it comes into contact with the skin. One study found that even a tablespoon of the toxic chemical can kill. According to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, long-term exposure can cause at least six types of cancer. It can also damage the nervous system and other vital organs. The EPA says consumers use will be phased out within a year, and most industrial and commercial uses will be banned within 2 years.
And Walmart says it will close all of its healthcare clinics and end virtual healthcare services. The largest retailer in the U.S. made a big push into healthcare in recent years. It has 51 clinics in six states. They're next to its superstores and offer primary and urgent care, x-rays, behavioral health, and dental work. Walmart targeted rural and underserved areas with a shortage of primary care providers. The announcement is an abrupt reversal in the company's strategy. It may leave a gap in healthcare access, particularly for lower-income patients without insurance who relied on the clinics. Walmart said its healthcare push was not profitable because of what it called the challenging reimbursement environment and escalating operating costs. The big box retailer said it determined it's not a sustainable business model. Walmart says it will continue operating its 4,600 pharmacies and more than 3,000 optical centers around the country.
And the last Medal of Honor recipient of the Korea War was honored with ceremony in the Capitol Rotunda yesterday. Ralph Puckett Jr. led an outnumbered Army Rangers company during a battle.
Puckett died earlier this month at the age of 97. He was awarded the Medal of Honor, the nation's highest military honor, in 2021, 7 decades after his actions during the Korean War.
The farewell ceremony at the Capitol is reserved only for the nation's most distinguished private citizens. Only 7 others have received the honor. The last was fellow Medal of Honor recipient Herschel Woody Williams, decorated for his actions during World War II.
Colonel Puckett's motto was simple. He said it this way, this is his quote, "Be there. When the going gets tough, when there's cold weather, rainy weather, somebody's shooting at you hot, you're going without food, whatever it is, be there." And on that cold day in November 1950, Colonel Puckett was there for his men and his country.
Over 2 days in November 1950, Puckett led his roughly 50 Rangers in securing a strategically important hill. He sprinted across the open area to draw fire so that his men could find and destroy enemy machine gunners.
Though badly outnumbered, Puckett's troops repelled multiple counterattacks from a Chinese battalion of an estimated 500 soldiers before being overrun.
Puckett suffered serious wounds to his feet, backside, and left arm after 2 mortar rounds landed in his foxhole. He ordered his men to leave him behind, but they refused. Still to come, British police today arrested a sword-wielding attacker who killed a 13-year-old child. The chain of events and how it played out.
And Russia is allegedly violating international airspace regulations by interfering with GPS signals. How a European country responds.
Baby toys and other stuff for kids from China are seized at a California port, some in violation of the Federal Hazardous Substances Act. More on that shortly here on NTD News Today.
Welcome back. In Europe, candidates are getting ready for June elections. The top job in the EU is on the ballot this time. The main contenders faced off against each other last night in the first debate. They're challenging current European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen.
Our campaign promise today is that we will begin by firing 10,000 bureaucrats in Brussels. And I would like to start with you, Ursula von der Leyen. Your Commission presidency has been a disaster. On your watch, millions of illegal migrants have entered into our continent. On your watch, you have been at the focus point of the Pfizer scandal under investigation by the European Public Prosecutor's Office.
Do you commit here to be radically transparent and cooperate with the prosecution in the context of the files that were open against you?
Listen, we have a judiciary that is independent, and of course the judiciary creates the transparency that is necessary. I respect our independent judiciary.
But do you commit to be transparent? That was the question.
I am transparent. I am transparent.
Von der Leyen is currently fending off a scandal called Pfizergate. She allegedly refused to reveal text messages between herself and pharmaceutical giant Pfizer at the time of the COVID-19 pandemic. That was when the European Commission secured vaccine shots.
The elections process for the head of the European Commission is a bit unusual. There is no official rule saying the candidate who wins actually has to take over the role.
The political party that gathers the most votes can propose any candidate after the elections. The European Parliament then has to accept that candidate with a vote. And now we have some short headlines from the UK, Germany, and other European countries. Ireland wants to send illegal immigrants back to the UK, but the UK is rejecting that idea.
British Prime Minister Rishi Sunak on Monday said that his government will decide who is allowed to enter and that the migrants are coming through France.
Sunak says the increase in crossings from the UK to Ireland shows that his Rwanda policy is working.
That plan sends some illegal immigrants on a one-way trip to Rwanda. The Prime Minister says this will deter risky English Channel crossings.
A 13-year-old boy was killed and four other people were injured after a stabbing in London earlier today.
British police arrested a man wielding a sword who attacked members of the public. The man also allegedly attacked two police officers.
Police were initially called after reports of a vehicle hitting a house. Witnesses say they heard police shouting to the suspect, urging him to put down the weapon as they chased after him.
The incident isn't being treated as terror-related.
Several thousand steel workers are demonstrating in Germany today. They're protesting job cuts at steel manufacturer ThyssenKrupp.
This comes after management announced plans to sell 20% of the company's shares. The company also plans to reduce production capacity. This would mean an unspecified number of jobs lost.
The supervisory board will discuss plans for the entry of the new shareholder in May. Organizers announced further protests. The European country of Estonia accuses Russia of violating international airspace regulations. They argue the Kremlin interferes with GPS signals. The country's foreign minister now says he'll take up the matter with his NATO and European Union partners.
A Finnish airline temporarily suspended a regular flight to Estonia for a month. That's due to ongoing GPS disturbances that prevented two planes from landing.
The airline says it doesn't know where the interference originated, but said there has been an increase in incidents since 2022.
The carrier has reported similar problems near Russia's Kaliningrad exclave and Finland's eastern border with Russia. And missile debris that landed in a Ukrainian city on January 2nd was from a North Korean ballistic missile. That's according to a report from United Nations sanctions monitors. Let's dive in.
This footage is from days after the January strike. At the time, the local prosecutor's office showed fragments of the missile to the media, suggesting they could have been from one supplied by North Korea. In the report, the monitors concluded that the debris was from a Hwasong-11 series missile and is in violation of the arms embargo on North Korea. It's been under UN sanctions since 2006 over its ballistic missile and nuclear programs. In their report, the monitors say they, quote, could not independently identify from where the missile was launched, nor by whom. Information about the missile's trajectory, supplied by Ukraine, suggests it was launched from Russia, the report says.
Russia and the DPRK must be held accountable for their actions.
The U.S. and others have previously accused North Korea of transferring weapons to Russia to use against Ukraine, which it invaded over 2 years ago. Both have denied the accusations. Last year, they vowed to deepen military relations.
China's Coast Guard today used water cannons against Philippine vessels near the Scarborough Shoal in a disputed area of the South China Sea.
The shoal, which China calls Hwangyan Island, is one of a number of disputed islands and reefs in the South China Sea, which has been a flashpoint of territorial disputes between the Asian nations.
A Philippine Coast Guard ship and a fishing vessel were patrolling the waters off the shoal when four Chinese Coast Guard ships, backed by six suspected militia ships, executed dangerous blocking maneuvers. That's according to a Philippine Coast Guard spokesperson.
A Chinese Coast Guard ship used a water cannon against the fishing vessel, and two other Chinese Coast Guard ships hit the Philippine Coast Guard ship, which suffered some damage.
And the new leader of the Select Committee on the Chinese Communist Party has taken the helm. Michigan Congressman John Molinar took over after his predecessor, Representative Mike Gallagher, left Congress. He shared his vision and priorities as the new chairman in an announcement video yesterday.
I've witnessed the CCP's near constant efforts to undermine America's core values and sovereignty. I've come to understand that what the Chinese Communist Party really fears most is a united America, an America where Democrats and Republicans work together to defend our nation.
Chairman Molinar outlined a series of priorities to deter Beijing's military aggression toward Taiwan, protect American technology and supply chains, and prevent CCP proxies from harassing people on U.S. soil.
On top of that, the Epoch Times reports that Molinar also looks to tackle Beijing's unfair trade practices, among other economic aggressions targeting U.S. businesses.
The committee has worked on a wide range of issues over the past 14 months, especially by raising awareness and introducing legislation to address issues surrounding the Chinese regime.
Facing a divided U.S. House today, the committee says it looks to unite bipartisan efforts to protect American values and profits. And dangerous toys shipped from China. California authorities recently seized nearly $80,000 worth of items at a seaport. Officials say the products violated child safety standards. Autism balance chairs, baby changing tables, and step stools were among the items taken. Customs officers discovered the suspicious items concealed in legitimate cargo. The items lacked children's product certificates and tracking labels. The autism balance chairs violated the Consumer Product Safety Act, while the changing tables were found in violation of the safety standard for baby changing products. The toys failed to meet small parts requirements and were also found in violation of the Federal Hazardous Substances Act.
William Sonoma will pay a record nearly $3.2 million penalty over improperly labeling products as made in the USA. The Federal Trade Commission said the company broke a 2020 order prohibiting companies from advertising foreign-made products as American-made.
According to regulators, William Sonoma used the labeling on multiple products that were actually made in China and other countries.
The FTC said the brands included the Gold Touch, Rejuvenation, Pottery Barn Teen, and Pottery Barn Kids.
The retailer agreed to a settlement that requires them to pay the civil penalty, which is the largest ever in a Made in the USA case.
Coming up, the 8th World Chinese Traditional Martial Arts Competition is coming soon. We hear one contestant tell his story of finding martial arts and changing his life.
And a 30-year-old German beats his own world record for the biggest wave ever surfed. The Daredevil says the 94-foot wave was a dream come true. More shortly here on NTD News Today.
The 8th World Chinese Traditional Martial Arts Competition is coming soon. The event organized by NTD will begin in June.
One contestant shares his story of how a Bruce Lee movie changed his life. Let's take a look.
Taiwan's Ling Chixing is a former silver medalist in the Southern Fist category. He's returning to the competition this year. He's now a top-notch martial artist, but that wasn't always the case. Ling says he was weak and sickly as a child.
When I was 6 years old, my father took me to see Bruce Lee's Rise of the Dragon, and from that moment on, I felt that I must have a connection with martial arts in my life, and my family was very supportive of me later on.
Mr. Lin's style of Southern Fist is marked by rapidly moving and changing positions. It's a unique martial arts style commonly known as soft fist. It emphasizes the relaxation of the whole body, the flexibility of steps, and the use of force to take advantage of a situation. This year, Mr. Ling is bringing his students to compete in the NTD's International Martial Arts Competition.
This is my second time participating in the competition. I hope it will broaden my students' horizons, especially with the intense international competition. It will allow them to learn more.
NTD's International Traditional Chinese Martial Arts Competition aims to promote traditional Chinese martial arts, propagate martial morality, and revive the true, divinely inspired traditional Chinese culture. Mr. Ling invites all martial artist enthusiasts to join in the fun.
I hope we can all come together in the spirit of passing on the tradition of martial arts, and I hope to see you all in New York in August.
NTD's 8th International Traditional Chinese Martial Arts Competition Asia-Pacific Preliminary Competition will be held in June in Taiwan and Germany and the U.S. The semifinals and finals will take place in New Jersey this September. The top prize for Mr. Lin's category is $5,000. NTD News, Taiwan.
And once confirmed, a 38-year-old German will have beaten his own world record for the biggest wave ever surfed. Back in February, the Daredevil rode a monster 94-foot wave in Nazaré, Portugal. NTD's Andrew Thomas has more on the epic ride.
For Sebastian Stoner, riding an 8-story tall wave was a dream come true. Due to be officially confirmed later this year, he will have beaten his current record of 86 feet.
I realize it is possible to surf the biggest waves in stormy conditions. I realize that another dream of mine came true, so I proved to myself that I define my possible.
A drone prototype precisely measured waves during a huge swell on the day of the record attempt. Stoner also used new surfboard technology to reach speeds of more than 60 miles per hour.
It's exciting. It's both in both ways extreme. It's very peaceful in a very humbling way. I realize how small I am as a human compared to Mother Nature and to the largest physical energy in the ocean. And on the other hand, it's a very powerful feeling.
Despite the hours of preparation, surfing huge waves is inherently dangerous.
When I saw the rescue team that we created in a partnership with the German Army, and I look at everyone and I'm like, wow, those are the best in the world. I can trust them 100%. That gives me the confidence.
Andrew Thomas, NTD News.
The golden arches at McDonald's are an iconic symbol recognized around the world, but one of the fast food chain's locations in Arizona boasts a very different color.
The McDonald's in Sedona boasts turquoise letters instead of the traditional gold font. It's the only one of its kind in the world.
That's because city officials require buildings to blend in with the natural red rock landscape.
Teal turned out to be a more appropriate color for the logo.
Now the Sedona McDonald's is drawing tourists who take selfies in front of the unique arches. The menu remains the same.
And lastly, whether it's milk tea or a fruity flavor, grab your boba straw. Today is National Bubble Tea Day.
Bubble tea can be customized with different toppings and sugar levels. The drink was created in the 1980s in Taiwan.
It combines tea, milk, and tapioca bubbles, also known as boba or pearls.
Celebrate by sharing your favorite drink on social media with the hashtag National Bubble Tea Day. And fun fact, it is quite popular here at NTD.
That is true. Now for round-the-clock original news coverage, visit us at NTD.com or download our NTD app.
And be sure to stick around for NTD Newsroom at 3 p.m. Eastern. We'll cover more stories from the U.S. and around the world.